刮胡万胡刮胡那胡那胡胡胡那胡胡胡胡阿达米勒勒阿米那。
Broadcasting from high above the reserve, this is Radio Harambe. Jambo, everyone, and welcome to episode 15 of Radio Harambe, the official podcast of JomboEveryone.com, covering Disney's Animal Kingdom, Walt Disney World, and also a bit of wildlife conservation. I am Dave McBride, coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios, and joining me from somewhere in the world, a man who spent last week painting the nursery for the new baby giraffe at Kidani Village, it's Safari Mike. Mike, how are you?
Jambo, I'm in the Amazon.
Yeah, you have a little bit different connection today. You must be on a satellite phone or something like that?
Exactly right. We're cruising the Amazon looking for Mata Mata. What are your thoughts on the Mata Mata?
It sounds like a drink to me.
Close. It's a turtle.
Ah!
It looks like a pile of leaves. They are vicious little guys that eat a lot of fish here in the Amazon River, and we're studying them.
Cool. But that name's great, Mata Mata. Sounds like a tiki drink. Speaking of tiki drinks, also joining us today is a great friend and supporter of the show, a man who does all the grunt work for what is certainly the most irreverent and hilarious of Disney podcasts. It's Adam of the Disney Hipsters. How are you, sir?
Hello there. I'm good. I actually knew the answer to that question, but I didn't want to cut in because I wasn't quite announced yet.
No, Mike likes to make sure that he asks something I probably don't know.
How do you not know that?
So that I can sound ridiculous.
Okay, good.
That's what he
does.
It
didn't sound ridiculous, though. Not that many people would know what that is.
And even if they do know, I try to come up with some sort of fun joke. You know what I'm saying? On this show, we will talk about all the news from the Animal Kingdom, the rest of Walt Disney World, and then in our feature section, it seems we'll be talking about tea, but more on that later. Let's start with the local news. And the biggest news from this week, something we reported on over the weekend on JomboEveryone.com. The past week, Disney posted a call for performers to audition for the Festival of the Lion King. Now you're wondering what that might mean, but let me get through this quickly. Disney actually has a website where they post all the auditions for all to read. And one of them said that Disney Parks Talent Casting is seeking all sorts of vocalists for the Festival of the Lion King, an African-inspired celebration of music in the feature film. Well, here's the important part. It says the original musical theater production will be performed live in the new state-of-the-art indoor 1,500-seat theater and around at Disney's Animal Kingdom. It also says that they're especially seeking performers with a diverse look for full-time and part-time positions beginning in April of 2014. Now, guys, there's a couple of things about this that stand out for me. One, obviously, is the date. Two, they said that callbacks were going to be around the first of the year, so that gives you possibly an idea of when they're going to start transitioning the casts. Also, it tells us that this show may change slightly, but it may change, which is the reason why they're going to audition new performers. At least that's what I get out of it. What do you guys think?
I think one of the important things about it is the April date. If it's going to take that long to change from January to April, they're going to be, I mean, it's going to have to change a little bit. I can't imagine it's going to be the same exact show. But if they're going to have people starting in April, wouldn't there be at least some time where they're going to be, well, practicing with the new cast? I mean, I'm not sure if that means it's going to open in April.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I tried out for a tumble monkey position.
I thought that was Andrew.
No, he was already a tumble monkey.
Oh, all right.
I thought it would be fun, but I didn't make it, so we'll see. No, I'm surprised. I think it's kind of funny with the special look. Like, I mean, they might as well just come out and say gay face, which there's more of than anything. In
a diverse look, too, which also means multiracial, to be honest.
Yeah, they should come out and say African-American.
Yeah.
Oh, they need some. Yes, I'm just going to stop it there. Yeah, I'm interested to see where the show goes. I mean, it's kind of old. It's clearly a huge hit still, so I understand why they're keeping it.
But it, but do you guys agree that the need to audition new cast members may in fact mean that the show is changing? I mean, am I extrapolating too much out of that? I mean, I can't think of another reason why they wouldn't just take the current performers and bring them into the new facility, unless the show's changing in some way where they would require new people.
Well, I mean, they periodically change the cast.
They always change the cast, but yeah.
That's part of it.
That requires,
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, it's a good chance that they're changing at least some of it. And I don't know why they would need to have such a huge open casting for it. And I also don't know why they would name the show in it.
Yeah, they're open.
I find that to be a little odd.
From the rest of the casting, they're pretty much casting everyone involved in the show.
Yeah, typically when you see casting calls, they're just sort of more vague and descriptive about the position. Mm-hmm. You know, but not necessarily like, you know, well, we're casting for this movie. Yeah. Here's the name of it and this is what it's about.
Right. Well, so we'll see what happens. Keep you posted on that. The next one I wanted to report was a rumor. Robert Niles of Theme Park Insider is reporting the possibility that the new Avatar Land at Disney's Animal Kingdom, scheduled to open in 2017, will in fact open in many phases, kind of like New Fantasyland. So what I would imagine is you would see maybe the e-ticket come online later or something like that. Not much news here. And not much to the rumor. I guess it just sort of makes sense. I mean, that's kind of what they're doing now with these things, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they do. I mean, they try to get them open as quickly as possible.
and I think the most important thing is for people who are anxiously looking forward to this, such as you, Dave, you might be able to start enjoying part of Avatar before it's, you know, supposed to be completed in 2017. So maybe in 2016, the boat ride will be open or something.
Who knows? See, I read it the other way. I figured 2017, probably in December, they'll open up nothing besides the grounds and the boat ride.
Yeah, well, that could be. And you got to remember when they announced Fantasyland, I mean, it changed. It was pretty dynamic. Yeah. I mean, what they initially announced is not what we got.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised it's taking so long.
It blows my mind.
Like everything they do lately, it just takes forever.
The only thing I could think of is the amount of resources. Aren't they building a park in Asia? Like an entire park?
In Shanghai.
The only thing I can think of is a lot of the resources are probably diverted to that for the short term. But Adam, before we move on, I want to get you on the record on Avatar.
Yes.
You've discussed it in your show, the Disney Hipsters, but I want to discuss it here with us. Mike hates it for no really good reason. I don't hate it because I don't know what it is, because I can't possibly hate something that I don't know what it is.
Have you seen the movie?
I have seen the movie, but this isn't a movie. They're not making a movie. I can tell you I won't like the movie.
I just want to make sure. You were saying that you didn't know what it is and it made sense if you saw the movie.
No,
It doesn't make any sense.
I don't know what we're going to get. I don't know what the experience is going to be like. And the movie doesn't, in my personal opinion, the movie doesn't bear any resemblance other than the theme and the aesthetics onto the quality of the attraction. There's been no correlation between film quality and attraction quality at Disney up until now. They're two different animals. But I'm just curious whether or not you're excited about it or what you're basic overarching feel on the whole Avatar thing is.
So my thoughts kind of evolved over time with it. I still think it was a bad idea in a sense, because they got into this to try to get this idea of lands, and it's really to compete with the Potter land, to be straight about it. But they should be using properties that are very that have like a very, very strong fan base.
So what
classic beloved properties, and Avatar isn't that.
So what property would what property you think would fit there? Give me an example of what property would fit.
In Animal Kingdom, so I would just do something original, personally.
Well, take that away.
On the repair. If they were going to do something like a film property, they would be much better off with something like Lord of the Rings or something like that.
Only for popularity reasons.
Star Wars would say they own.
But only for popularity reasons, because Lord of the Rings and Star Wars certainly doesn't fit a conservation message like Avatar does.
No, and I agree. I mean, neither one of those belong in Animal Kingdom. I mean, it's a stretch for Avatar to become like an Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, it is.
Well, but Avatar, like, they're taking the idea that, like, okay, Star Wars made lots of money, so people love Star Wars, so let's build Star Wars things kind of idea, right, which works. Or same thing with Harry Potter.
Right.
With Avatar, you're taking this film made lots of money, so people must love it, which isn't the case at all. It was this made a lot of money because people were interested in seeing the crazy 3D effects.
Okay.
Right? You know, so that's kind of the problem.
Exactly.
But at the end of the day, since the some of those models that they've shown, they showed in, I guess, what was it, the D23 in Hong Kong or something, look awesome. So it looks way more practical than I imagined it was going to be. So hopefully lots of rock work and fake trees and real trees and lights and stuff like that.
Right.
So if they do a lot of that, then I'm into the idea. At least from like just a who cares what the Navi, who cares about Avatar itself, the area might be really cool just because it might be cool. So it kind of almost might be cool as in, like, if it was an original attraction.
Okay.
If that makes sense. So I'm more excited than I was. But I mean, if you're going to keep do a property that wasn't an original property, that wouldn't not have been one I chose. But you would have been, I mean, you know, not to beat the Beastly Kingdom thing, but you should have just brought that back.
Well, I mean, we've beat that a lot. I happen to think that idea was a non-starter from the beginning, but I think that that you're right about that. But in the cynical side of me, kind of goes back to the beginning of what you were saying, which is, you know, we're doing properties now. We're doing, you know, we're evolving into, you know, using the parks much more as a marketing arm for other properties than they've ever been before.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I mean, when's the last time they mentioned, like, just doing an original property?
Right.
Or original attraction not based off a film?
Everest. Okay, our next story is, speaking of properties, the Animal Kingdom is going to be featured apparently on the new Jungle Book Blu-ray, which is due out in February. And all we know, Mike, is that there's going to be something called I Want to Be Like You hanging out at Disney's Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
I have no idea what it could possibly be.
That is I hope it's something like the is it Beauty and the Beast? There's the woman who does Belle's voice does this like crazy version of one of the songs, I think. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I think it's on the... Is it on the Beauty and the Beast Blu-ray? Or no, it's somebody else. Some other female singer.
Is it?
Does this crazy version of the song. Oh, I know what it is. It's on the Peter Pan Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
They took like an original song that never had words to it, and they got Richard Sherman, I think, to write music to it.
Yeah.
And she sings it, and it's terrible.
Oh, good. So you're expecting the dreadful is what you're saying.
It's called Neverland, and it's
nice.
Andrew is singing behind me.
Yes,
I can hear it.
Go away.
I love that song.
So I'm guessing it's gonna be like a really cheesy,
good,
excellent. Like extra on the Blu-rays, which they usually are, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Great. Looking forward to it.
Yeah. You shouldn't be, but you also should.
Now I'm going to butcher this man's name for our next story, but let me just call him Nathie, Nathi. I have no idea how to say his last name. I think it's probably something like Gabashi. I have no idea. If you want to look for him, his first name is Nathie, Nathi, and his last name is spelled GCABASHE. He is the singer, one of the singers of the Buridika band. Now, there is one question I get more than any other in my email box and on my Twitter account and Facebook is, where can I get something to listen to by the Buridika band? It is a question I cannot answer other than last week, Nathie released a single, and I believe he has a larger project in the works. The single is called We All the Same. You can find them on iTunes. So if you're really jonesing for some kind of Buridika recording stuff, You can get it there on iTunes by searching for him.
So which band is that? Is that the one in Africa by...
Yes, the one right in the middle of Africa. They're the like the ensemble. They play like kind of a...
On the carving guy? Like right in front of the carving guy?
Yeah, right in a big stage. Yeah.
Yep.
But there's two bands. One is just drummers.
Yeah.
And then there's the full band, who are fantastic. They are a great band. And you know, everybody asks me where they can find stuff from them. And it's just not available as of now. And so, anyway.
Who's everybody? Who's everybody?
Mike, that is the one question I have gotten consistently since the opening of the website.
I asked that question David, at least 75 times.
I get this question every week, once a week, minimum.
It's me. Always me.
It's not you.
I can't believe they don't sell CDs of their stuff. Like, that seems crazy.
Yeah, I can't believe they wouldn't sell them either. But it is
not just theirs, but any performing kind of band that's been there for a while. Because I mean, they kind of do have the German bands, right? They have those like kind of badly pressed CDs, which may or may not actually be those guys.
Well, they actually used to do more. They still do Off Kilters. You can still find them. In the store. But nothing that they have is anything that's new. It's all stuff all their CDs are, you know, years and years old. They haven't sold anything new as far as I can remember, probably since 07 or somewhere along there. They used to.
That's considering the amazingness that is Off Kilter.
10 years ago, let's not get off on that. 10 years ago, they used to do a lot more than this. They used to sell all these, like you're saying, these different bands used to all have CDs, and then they got away from that. Mm-hmm. And they don't do it. And as far as I know, these bands, and they're not the only ones, the other ones that, you know, who get these questions, Disney just doesn't sell them as of now.
What was it? What's the band called?
Buridika.
See, I think they need to change it to like Buridika Rockin' or something like that.
Yeah.
And then people would be more into it. Well, they have to have traditional African music with modern, 1982 electric guitar.
Well,
I can't wait for the Mo Rockin' CD.
If we find out more about this, we will we'll keep you informed. We're gonna move on to the next one before we get too far into this. No. We're gonna move on. Mike sent me this story today. This is kind of a cute story about a baby okapi born. Mike, is it the LA Zoo?
Yeah.
Okay. LA Zoo announced the birth of a baby okapi, which are very rare. And even being born in captivity is one that does something that doesn't happen very often. You ask why this fits into local news. Well, it seems the okapi has a little bit of mouse in him. He is the first okapi born at the LA Zoo, and his father is an animal they call Jamal, who came to LA from Disney's Animal Kingdom. And every time I find these kind of things out, I like to kind of pass them around so people understand the work goes on at this thing. Is at Disney's Animal Kingdom is worth a lot more than what people understand as just a theme park. There's so much more going on here.
Yeah, your copy's name is Jamal?
The father.
Yeah, there's a lot. They've had very good luck breeding a copies for the most part. But I know they've had troubles pairs liking each other, which is, I think, why they shipped one of the males off and got a new male.
Yeah.
And that's where all the babies, I guess there's one baby now, and then there's another one that's on the way very shortly over at the Animal Kingdom Lodge.
Yeah, yes. I remember you guys finding out that there was one pregnant in May, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
Gotta get the right match is what you're saying?
Yeah, basically. You know, and it's also, you know, they work very closely with the AZA and all that kind of stuff. And I forget the name, but the genetic banks to make sure that, you know.
SSP.
Yes, thank you.
The Species Survival Plan.
Yes. You know, and they move their animals around and trade with other zoos and stuff to try to, you know, to kind of get that genetic diversity out there. And, you know, a lot of times, especially in captivity, you know, you'll have one or two animals in, you know, the whole of captivity that are the most valuable in terms of breeding. So you might only have like two males that get moved around everywhere.
Right.
Yeah, and then when you get a new, like, for example, the Bronx Zoo recently got a snow leopard from Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Which is completely unrelated to any snow leopard in the United States. So, you know, that sort of adds to the gene pool. So that happens sometimes too.
So it's interesting that that's a nice story that he was able to breed there. Because I don't think that male was breeding while it was at Animal Kingdom.
Found love in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, our last story is a bit of a wildlife conservation story. Just came over today. The U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, announced that they are posting, the State Department is posting $1 million reward for information leading to the dismantling of, and I'm going to butcher this one again, I think it's Jaisavang. I don't know how you say it, Jaisavang Network. It's a Laos-based wildlife trafficking network. The State Department says the network operates in South Africa, Mozambique, Thailand, Malaysia, Vietnam, and China. They kill endangered elephants, rhinos, other species, or products such as ivory. Over the years, several major seizures of illegal wildlife products have been linked to this network. So they're putting this first. This is the first ever of these kind of bounties to take steps towards ending this wildlife trafficking. And it is the first. It's a major governmental step. And one of the first proactive steps I can think of in quite a while on the part of the State Department.
They do this a lot with drug trafficking.
Yeah, this is where, it's basically the same idea. Yep.
Yeah, I know. I mean, poaching has gotten really, really terrible in the last, few years, I guess, it seems.
Unbelievable.
I mean, not that it always wasn't bad, but it's just really getting worse and worse and worse.
Yeah, it's picked up
certain areas.
Yeah, in certain areas picked up a lot of steam, but at the same time, it's also picked up a lot of coverage. That I think, exposure and celebrities are turning it into a their cause of the week, and for good, and I applaud that absolutely.
I know a big part of it is you have China becoming such a their middle class coming up and being able to buy more things, including things like rhino horn and stuff that's important in their culture. And they think it does stuff. I think mostly it would be nice to see kind of a large organization or our government or other government step up and chip in and for education purposes, because that's really what people need. They need to really learn that, a rhino horn is nothing more than a fingernail and it's not going to cure you or something like that.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. Because, they kind of blame the people who are buying it, but at the same time, they, as far as they know, it's the thing that's going to save their sick relative from dying. And if your kids were sick and someone's like, take this rhino horn, you would buy it too.
Probably true. All right.
But
that's it.
That's still good news. But go ahead. Sorry.
That's it. I was just going to say that's it for the local news. We're going to take a short break. Be back with Safari Mike's World News Roundup. Coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. Jennifer Green of Destinations in Florida is the official travel partner of Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com. Jen can do everything you need done in order to book your next Walt Disney World vacation and have the time of your life. She is an expert in everything Disney and will remove all the stress of booking your trip. And she is as committed to conservation as we are. So every vacation you book, or even every quote you request, means Jen and Destinations in Florida will make a donation to the Jumbo Everyone conservation effort. You can contact Jen directly by emailing her at jennifer.g@destinationsinflorida.com or by calling her directly at 443-424-0181. You can also head over to jumboeveryone.com and click the Destinations in Florida icon to get your vacation started. Seriously, what can be better than booking a Disney World vacation while helping to save wildlife? Welcome back to Radio Harambe. Dave McBride coming to you from the Radio Harambe studios. Mike is looking at turtles in the Amazon. How are you, Mike?
Very good. I just saw a couple of Matamata go by the boat just a few minutes ago. But I'm ready for the world news.
And also joining us is Adam from the Disney Hipsters. How are you, sir?
I am good.
Okay, Mike, go for it. I know we're going to get inundated with Downtown Disney stuff, but go ahead.
You want to start off with Downtown Disney?
I'll start off with whatever you like to start off.
There's a whole slew of changes to Downtown Disney coming up in the next couple of days, or have already happened. Number one is the superstar catering company food truck has arrived at Downtown Disney with its $13 little minor meatball sandwiches.
Yep. No vegetarian options. Sorry.
Wait a minute. $13 in a food truck?
Yes.
It's outrageous. I mean, it's ridiculous. I mean, I thought the whole idea of a food truck, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the food truck was you have minimal amount of ingredients and no real overhead so that you could charge a little bit less than you would get at, say, a deli right down the street.
Yeah, in the city. For better quality food.
Right.
Like, you know, where that food item might be $13 somewhere for like a lunch item, it should be like $8 from a food truck.
Right, because they cut the costs. But this is actually more expensive than a counter service anywhere else in Disney World. I don't understand.
But it's not even sticking to the idea of using local ingredients and all that kind of stuff. They're just taking the stuff that's in the restaurants and putting it on a food truck, which kind of defeats the whole food truck movement-y thing.
Guys, did I hear there's going to be one about, like, food and wine stuff?
Yes. It's going to be classics from, like, food and wine and
classics.
Flower Garden, I guess, maybe? I don't know. Yeah, again, no vegetarian ones.
There just won't be thousands of drunk people hanging around it, though, I would assume.
I mean, I like the idea of this before they announced it, but then they made the food trucks themselves. Like, I don't know why they couldn't find people with food trucks to come in and change them all the time.
Yeah, especially in Downtown Disney. I agree. What else is going on down there, Mike?
Well, Run Fit has opened in Downtown Disney West Side. It's kind of ugly, to be honest. I mean, it looks like something spit out of Miami Vice, but, it's open for those runners, which is not me.
No,
it is me though, the first thing that came to my mind was, boy, they really thought about that name, huh?
Yes, I'm very excited that the Run Disney store opened.
Run,
or whatever it's called. I don't even know the name, but even though you just said it, because I don't want to badmouth it because all the Disney hipster fans love running, all of them.
Oh, really?
Every single one. Yeah. They love the Disney hipsters, and they love running. So we love running, too.
I love running, but the thing that I love about running is that it doesn't cost me anything.
No, kind of running costs you lots of money.
So I don't like to do the things like boutique running stores and very expensive and having to pay for somebody, paying somebody for the thrill of running 24 miles.
I wonder what they really have, though, because at the, you know, I mean, I do work out and stuff, and I like to buy nicer workout clothes.
Yeah.
Because they just sit better. Like, you know, I'm not going to go buy a $7 pair of shorts.
Well, I'll tell you what they'll probably, in running stores like this, the feature of it really is that each person has a very different gait when they run. Mm-hmm. And there's like certain types, like how your heel hits the ground and whether or not it's on the inside of your foot or the outside of the foot touches first or where your weight distribution is. And stores like this tend to offer very expensive running shoes that are tailored for that. So they'll actually watch you run, or you can run on a pad of some kind that'll record it for them. And then they can make a recommendation for a shoe, a very expensive shoe, mind you, but a shoe that would be, you know, tailor fit, something that you probably wouldn't know walking into a, you know, Famous Footwear and buying a pair of sneakers that's on sale.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a good service, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're running a lot, I mean, I hurt myself just going to the gym three times a week for an hour. Not that I hurt myself, but, like, you know, your ankles and stuff start to wear out on you sometimes. So yeah. I could imagine if you're, like, training for marathons, you know.
This would be helpful.
Yeah, so... You know, I don't know. I mean, hopefully it works for all the people who are into the whole Run Disney thing, which Disney has done a great job of building a community around.
Have they ever?
I mean, it did one time that we, during our last trip, there was the Tower of Terror, or whatever it's called, that marathon. And so we couldn't get back to the lodge without driving off property, which was terrible.
Yeah,
very annoying.
Unbelievable. Oh yeah, Mike. Years ago,
not years ago, just a couple of years ago.
On a previous.
I made the mistake of going to Disney World when the marathon was going. You know, that weekend, and it was a nightmare that day. A nightmare.
I'm surprised they can't like close like half the roads or something like that, so that some cars can still drive on it. Like, especially when you're at the lodge and there's only one way to get there.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. my whole point of going to Disney World is I do not want to leave property for the 2 weeks that I'm there.
Right.
Don't make me drive off property.
Exactly. And what else is down there, Mike? There was another part in the downtown Disney, wasn't there?
What? You mean with the story?
Yeah.
Okay. The next one is, you know where Team Mickey is in downtown Disney? Well, that is closing and making way for the Marketplace Co-op concept store.
Oh my God.
I don't know what this is. I have no idea what this is.
Oh my God. It's the worst.
It's essentially six, I guess, smaller stores, areas that they're going to be in this one basic area. It's going to be, one's going to be called Beautifully Disney, which is basically makeup. One's going to be called Cherry Tree Lane, which is accessories for women, like scarves and jewelry and stuff. Then there's D-Tech, where you can personalize and customize your electronic accessories. The Trophy Room, which is going to have sports apparel and collectibles.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait.
Let him finish.
Okay, go ahead.
Which has home product for guests that want a splash of Disney in their furnishings and textiles. And finally, and I think my favorite, Zoe and Pickles, a girl's destination containing the latest trends and glamour for the up-and-coming fashionista.
How does this differ from what they already have there?
It doesn't. It's the Emporium.
Not at all.
They moved the Emporium to downtown Disney.
No, they just rebuilt it.
That was like a little boutique-y kind of shop, like store. They have these in Brooklyn a lot, like where they have these kind of warehouse spaces, and they'll have like five different like small boutique-y stores in them.
Oh.
So they're trying to go for that kind of thing with this whole Disney Springs stuff, I think. But again, they're not really doing it. They're just doing it themselves. But if you really think, like, everything in there, it has a spot in the Emporium.
I was thinking in the World of Disney, there's little corners for all this in the World of Disney, too.
Yeah. So,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. That's it. Sounds totally lame.
What's next?
Disney.
All right, let's go to Pop Century. Where
let's not resort... go to Pop Century, but go ahead.
Well, you know what I mean. We're going to talk about Pop Century. Where starting this week, there will be no Key to the World cards. You're just going to get Magic Bands. That's it. So hopefully the Magic Bands are working for you, because that's all you're getting.
Yeah, we've known about this for a while. This was leaked to us from a cast member. and you know, obviously they're the first, and it's just going to go on from there.
Right.
It's a little sad. I really like the Magic Bands. They worked really well for us.
I hated them, but okay.
So I don't necessarily mind. The only thing that stinks is if you stay at concierge level, you will no longer get a gold card.
Oh.
Which is very depressing.
I've never done, but that's okay.
And you never will now.
I know. I'll forever never have a gold card.
I never will, but that's not the reason why.
I have mine. It is in my Disney box. It's very exciting.
It's in your Disney box?
It's in my Disney box.
Excellent.
We have a very small Disney box, and if it can't fit in the Disney box, so basically if something new goes in the Disney box, something old has to come out of
it.
And that is the only Disney things that we own.
I might have a Disney box somewhere too.
But that's it. But if we do, we have our gold Key to the World cards that people aren't going to have anymore. So it's a little bit sad. And I also think it's going to be trouble for when they use it, Magic Bands for extra magic hours.
Oh,
it's going to be a nightmare.
Oh
yes.
Like waiting on the line while they scan everyone's Magic Bands to get onto an attraction is going to get old really fast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And what will happen is that not everybody's Magic Bands are going to work.
Oh, of course.
And not everybody's information is going to be correct. And it's because that is what will happen with a system like this and with Disney running it, because for some reason they can't do computers. I don't know why that is.
Yeah, neither do I. And it's also very slow. The servers are very slow.
Very slow. But the nightmare I had with this whole system when I was down there recently, I'm not looking forward to dealing with it again. I'm certainly not going to go back during any test phase.
Yes.
That's for sure.
We had a very good experience with it. We took advantage of the Fast Plus system and all that kind of stuff, and had a good time for the most part. I mean, they really hate the website. It's slow as anything. They need to fix it, and it needs to be way more user friendly. But we were great with the Magic Bands themselves and paying for things with them and using them for Fast Passes and stuff. But you know, the system's so slow. Like when you scan your Magic Band, it takes so long to actually register for some reason. Like the green light spins, or the light spins around for a second. You know, like it just takes so long. So if they're doing that with everyone trying to get into an attraction over and over again, it's just, it's going to get old.
And so, it has made what I thought was going to be a speed up of the entrance process. It hasn't done anything to that other than...
Yes, it has.
No, it has not.
You're crazy.
Other than it has added, it has added more possibilities, like more stations to go in. However, the process of holding up your band, waiting for the little finger thing to come in, doing that takes just as long as it did putting your annual pass through it and doing the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, it takes about the same amount of time, again, because their servers are slow, but it does add about 20% through in terms of how many, you know, because of the four stations at each thing instead of the two. So you get about a 20% increase. I mean, we were definitely getting in the parts faster.
No doubt.
I don't know, what did you go at a high point of the season?
No. I went 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. I mean, we went in, when were we there? The beginning of October.
You guys went down to the end of September, right?
Yep.
Yeah, very end of September into October. And it was great. Like, and you know, we got in quickly, it was easy for us. I found with them, like, I was easy, like if I just hustled around, I would always find one that like was open that people were just kind of missing.
No, I never found that.
Yeah. You know, and I have no patience for people either. So I do what I do when I drive up here and stuff like that.
Right.
Like I was just like, if there was you know, you have two in a row. If somebody's stuck at the one furthest out and the people are just standing behind them not going, I'll just walk in front of the five of them and go scan myself from the first one and walk in the park.
But people don't realize that, so they don't move any quicker. And the other thing is, there's only one cast member for four instead of one cast member for one. So yes, now you have a situation where he's handling multiple people. So if one person's messed up, the other person next to you is messed up, well, you have to wait until he's done with that one now instead of just go. Oh, I've said my piece on this. I don't want to get bogged down in Magic Band nonsense. It's
so
the nightmare.
Anyway, I do like the Magic Bands.
I do too.
I disagree. But at the same time, the Key of the Worlds were nice for extra magic hours because you could just quickly show them to get onto a line.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're going to have to scan and wait for it to register, which is going to be annoying when you get a party of, you know, 40 walking up to a queue.
Sure, because even the fast pass queues now have definitely slowed down in the big places.
Yeah. Like we've done extra magic hours at night. I don't know why this keeps going back to extra magic hours, but we did extra magic hours once in Animal Kingdom when they used to have them, and it was awesome. And there were a group of 200 like high school Brazilian kids, and they would just go on. They were going on Everest over and over and over again. So if you had to wait. Well, if you got stuck behind them, well, they scanned 200 Magic Bands in a row.
Oh, God.
You know what I mean? That's going to be horrible.
Yep.
But right now, they could just walk by and show their little cards.
So what's next?
Carousel of Progress was recently shut down for filming of the Tomorrowland movie with George Clooney, although he was not in Disney World. There was a lot of people dressed up as 60s vacationers. But they're filming the movie and they shut down Carousel Progress for, I think, only one day.
Yes. Yeah, I think it was only one day as well.
I'm out on this one. I don't know what this is. I don't know what the Tomorrowland film is. I know they're making one, but I know nothing about it.
Yeah, no one really knows anything about it. Yeah. That's kind of the whole point, I guess. They've been trying to be very mysterious. It's a is Brad Bird still attached to direct it?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, so Brad Bird of Incredibles... Iron Giant fame. Mm-hmm.
But it's not an unofficial one like the other. What is it? Escape from Tomorrowland? Or
oh, no. That's that terrible movie.
Did you see that?
No, I did not. I mean, I've seen pieces. I watched little bits of it. It was awful.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's basically, from what I understand, they basically like found some box in the archives that had like some Tomorrowland random stuff in it, that box that they showed.
yeah,
maybe like a year and a half ago,
right?
And then they were like, let's just make a movie based off of this. Who knows? I mean, if that's really the case or not, but we'll
Brilliant.
See.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm excited about it. I like Brad Bird a lot. He's made some really fantastic films, and he made a Mission Impossible that was kind of watchable. Compared exactly. to the first two, which are terrible. Yeah, so I mean, I'm excited.
Cool. Okay, Mike.
Back to movies, kind of, sort of. While Star Wars was announced, Star Wars 7 is announced for December 18, 2015. Mm. At the same time, Bob Iger said the following. The only thing I can share, which actually I don't think we've really talked about too much, is that there's a fair amount of development going on at Disney Imagineering right now to expand the Star Wars presence in California and in Orlando, and eventually to other parks around the world. It's probably likely that Star Wars will be more than just in just our two domestic parks.
Shocker.
Well, I mean, they admitted that it's going to be in both in California and in Orlando.
Experience. Yeah.
I mean, I think we all assume
right.
that Disney Hollywood Studios is going to get a Star Wars land at some point. The real fascinating one is Disneyland. What are they going to do with that?
Yeah, they'll probably demolish something in DCA.
Yeah, probably.
Maybe at the end of the Paradise Pier area by like Goofy Sky School. That weird Italian restaurant. They got some backstage area.
Yeah, I guess. It could be Skywalker Ranch and do some California, you know. I mean, there is a California connection. Or they do something with Tomorrowland.
Yeah. Or they do the third gate over in the parking lot behind Paradise Pier, the hotel.
Yeah, like a small third gate. They could do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's really tiny, you know, or they expand part, you know. I don't know. They don't really have that many options.
No, not really.
No. This is it. Let's get back to that Avatar. Like, this is the kind of property they should be. If they want to make something that people just love and drool over and are obsessed with, this is one of those properties. If they're going to make an totally immersive environment, it should be Star Wars.
This is the biggest one they could possibly do, in my opinion. This is crazy.
They should have just pulled the money out of Avatar and dropped it into Star Wars Land and redo the studios and just give all Animal Kingdom needs. It is like an e-ticket. So.
Yeah, I mean, it trumps Potter to me.
Yeah, but Potter's like Potter and Star Wars are pretty similar in the kind of properties that they are. Again, Avatar is not. So, I mean, I don't know. But, I mean, hopefully we'll get an announcement sooner than later. I don't know what they're waiting for.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
You know that you would just make money.
Oh.
Oh.
There's no doubt. If you wiped out half of the studios and put in a giant Star Wars land with, like, a couple of e-tickets and, like, you know, immersive restaurants and things.
Oh, yeah. And they don't have to worry about the development of any other new films or anything like that. They just can base everything on the first trilogy. The first three films, and they, you know, well, and I say first in chronological order of the ones from the 70s, the original three. If they just based it on those, they'll print money.
Nope. They'll do, even if they do the crappy ones, they print money.
Yeah, oh, yeah. They could. They could. Sure.
I mean, you know, I don't know. I just think
they have a new cartoon coming out and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, they're pushing it pretty quickly for the most part since the acquisition. But, I mean, I don't know why there wasn't a Star Wars land 15 years ago.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, I suppose maybe they just have to pay George Lucas a lot of money for it. Doesn't he get, like, or for the time he was getting, like, $1 million a year for every attraction that they had opened that had Star Wars on it?
Yeah, but even still, you know, it's kind of worth the investment.
Yeah, it is.
You know, it's a big, big property. But now they're going to be paying, you know, James Cameron $1 million for blue people who could just be blue people. Like, you could have came up with original blue people and it would have been the same.
It could have been green. Like, they could have been green or purple.
Yeah, it made green people.
Exactly.
We get it.
Sorry.
Is that it, Mike, or you got more?
I got one more.
All right.
I found this article through the internet. The Westerheim Museum is shipping to Epcot Center. Oh, they call it, interestingly enough, they call it Epcot Center in the article, which I found funny.
That's great. Display.
It is great. They call it, but it's this museum that's dedicated to Norwegian American art in Idaho, I believe it is. Iowa, one of those eyes.
It's Idaho, by the way.
Idaho. Okay, whatever. Same thing. And they're shipping certain artifacts that are going to be used at the new, it's called Norsk Kultur, the inspiration for Disney's Frozen, which is the obviously what's taking over for the Viking Museum that's no longer gone. And they give you some of the examples. There's going to be a fiddle, a carved wooden chair, some jewelry, a small loom, and examples of decorative Norwegian painting called Rosmaling, which is, I don't know if you guys know what that is. I looked it up before we went on the air, but it was, you know, basically this flowery decorative art that they put on furniture and things like that. The other interesting thing that it says is that these artifacts are going to be on loan to Epcot Center for 3 years. So I don't know what that tells you, but Epcot has them for 3 years.
I am extremely excited. I was very sad in that the Steve Church is going to just turn into a Frozen thing. Because I figured that they would have changed it. I mean, not that I mind that they change it for a little bit, but, you know, Disney, it would stay there for 17 years. So I'm really excited that they're kind of mixing the idea of Frozen and mixing actual, you know, artifacts.
To me, it's going to really depend on how much Frozen is in there. If it's only like little references and it's mostly artifacts and museum quality type of things, then I'm probably going to be okay with it.
Yeah, they'll probably tie Frozen into those artifacts.
Yeah, I guess. I still want the Viking Museum back. I'm still going to root for Frozen to be a complete disaster that they are so embarrassed by it that they remove the...
I don't think you're going to have to worry about
apparently
that.
Apparently, it is not, but we'll see. But yeah, you know that like Eric the Red is like in a dumpster somewhere.
And by the way, Mike, it is actually Iowa. Let me get it right. It's Iowa.
Is it Iowa?
It's Iowa. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I thought it was Idaho. I think you told me it was Idaho.
You really should give Iowa a try.
Iowa. All right. Are we done?
Is there a difference, though? Idaho and Iowa?
Yeah.
They're totally different.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Be back with our feature segment coming back on Radio Harambe in just a second. At the Jumbo Everyone store, you can purchase fun and stylish apparel and merchandise, all while helping save wildlife. At Radio Harambe and JomboEveryone.com, we are committed to doing everything we can to help our conservation partners who are on the ground working to keep endangered animals from extinction. So with every purchase made at the store, we will donate 50% of the profits to our partners. You'll find t-shirts, hats, iPad covers, tote bags, and much more. And all the items are customizable to fit your size, taste, and budget. We have great Jumbo Everyone logo merchandise, plus some really exciting animal designs featuring cheetahs, rhinos, gorillas, macaws, and zebras. Go to JomboEveryone.com and click the banner for the store and help us in our conservation efforts. Welcome back to Radio Harambe. It is now time for the feature section of the show. Now, Adam from the Disney Hipsters is joining us, and I just want to just give a quick little background. If for those of you who haven't been listening to us for our first 15 episodes, we have what we have done a series of sort of the Disney Hipsters solo here, and this was a plan hatched really by Jamie of the Disney Hipsters and Mike. And for some reason, Mike decided to allow Jamie to pick all of the topics that each of the Disney Hipsters would talk about while they were on the show here. And for some reason, we all went with him.
Your idea, Adam? Was that your idea?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
That's what
letting Jamie pick things is always a blessing in disguise, I guess. Is that the proper term to use?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, it's basically that she picks things and they're never quite right, and then they make for a hilarious podcast.
Excellent. That's why we went with it.
Yes, but then she picked kind of boring things, so go figure.
So for Adam's episode, we're going to discuss the Royal Anandapur Tea Company. And before we begin our in-depth conversation on a tea cart, we are going to turn it over to Safari Mike, who is going to regale us with some stories of the Royal Anandapur Tea Company. Right, Mike?
Sure, why not? Regale might be a strong word, but sure, why not?
Okay.
Yes. Before you go on, though, you're just pronouncing that a little wrong. It's the Royal Amanda Bynesapur Tea Company.
So you've got it all wrong. Go ahead, Mike.
But just go ahead.
All right. So tea is an important aspect of Anandapur. Now, Anandapur, as everybody knows who listens to this podcast anyway, is the area that is a mythical country in basically Asia somewhere, like Thailand/India. That and one of its important exports was tea. Now, one of the interesting things is that Anandapur and Sirkazang, which is where Expedition Everest is, they're kind of tied together by the Royal Anandapur Tea Company. The tea company that we're going to talk about was a major exporter of teas in the area from like the 1900s to like the 1930s. And if you actually go into Expedition Everest, you'll see an article about the Forbidden Mountain. And I'm just going to read you the article so you have a little bit of a background of this tea company. And here it goes. Despite dire warning from irate local residents, the old Anandapur rail services route through the Forbidden Mountain was reopened today. Closed since 1934 under mysterious circumstances, the railroad, formerly operated by the Royal Anandapur Tea Company, was refurbished by the Himalayan Escapes Tours and Expeditions. The intent, say the operators, is to provide safe, efficient transport to base camp at Mount Everest and environs. Hundreds of Western trekkers and climbers are expected to make the journey to Sirkazang to book passage on the new service. In the heyday of the great tea plantations that flourished in the region, private rail lines were established to carry produce to distant markets. The Royal Anandapur Tea Company used the Forbidden Mountain route extensively in the 1920s and early 1930s. However, beginning in 1933, the railroad was plagued with accidents. Some drew a connection between the mishaps and increasing British expeditionary attempts to reach the summit of Mount Everest, invoking the spirit of the guardian of the sacred mountain. By 1934, continual equipment breakdowns and track breakages caused the tea company to shutter its facilities and pull up stakes. The legend of a sacred beast continued to loom large among locals, coming to a head in 1982 with the tragic disappearance of the Forbidden Mountain expedition. However, warnings and naysayers aside, the daring entrepreneurs behind Himalayan Escapes were determined to put on a loud, colorful show to celebrate their achievement. Local government officials in attendance trumpeted the event as a landmark enterprise, marking a new era of prosperity and opportunity for Sirkazang. It is indeed our hope that this is the case. Now, that is an article that's posted up in line for Expedition Everest. And it kind of ties Sirkazang to Anandapur. And it's all tied in by this Royal Tea Company, which, oddly enough, is just this little booth where you can buy tea not far from the Kali River Rapids and, you know, the center of Anandapur.
Sure. On the banks of the river there.
Yeah, and that is kind of the backstory for this little tea cart. That actually kind of, like I said, ties Sirkazang, the area of Expedition Everest,
right,
to Anandapur. And so even these little tea carts, or this little tea cart, I should say, is an integral part of the theming of the area.
Well, Adam, you are the expert.
I'm an expert.
Royal Anandapur Tea Company, so I've been told.
Am I? Did James tell you that?
Well, I can't think of any other reason why she would have picked you to cover this particular topic. So obviously you must have either a strong opinion or Perhaps.
One time I had a cup of tea in 1998, and I told her about it. I think that's why she picked this book for me.
Okay, so I'm not a tea drinker.
I really am, but, and that's actually why she did pick me.
Right.
But, I mean, from the theming, I think this sits in really well, and I think you guys would probably agree to that.
Oh, definitely.
You know. Even the booth itself, like the little the decor in the booth itself, the little teas and the and all that kind of stuff, really does fit in well.
Yeah, and it's very well themed. Like even they have like little jars of like with the actual teas that they carry, with little like kind of written labels, kind of messily on shelves and that kind of stuff. Like not actual serving ones, but like on the top shelves of the booth, I guess.
Right.
If that makes sense. Right. So I mean, it definitely fits in very well, and then that's kind of where it ends.
Yeah, because I was kind of surprised to see that in the hills of Sirkazong, they sell donuts.
Yes. So, okay. So, let's go with the actual tea. Now, this is a really good attempt at something. Like, it's a really nice idea. Like, I like that they went out of their way and were like, ooh, let's get some more kind of loose leaf, better quality teas. But then they hired Joffreys. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much wrong with this card, and like, that, well, with the tea itself and what they serve.
So, right. Quickly, because I don't know much about it. You're saying that up until a certain time, this was a better and more kind of eclectic option place. I mean,
No, it's always been the same.
Okay,
from what I understand, since it opened, but it's always been off.
Okay.
Yeah. So the idea is, okay, so you're not really a tea drinker, but for people who are, like, tea that comes in tea bags tends to be rubbish. Like Lipton. And don't get me wrong, I enjoy a cup of Lipton, but it's really just like tea shake.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
For you, those of you who indulge in other bad things. whereas, like, the loose leaf, full-bodied kind of stuff tends to be a lot better depending on the type of tea, and there's different teas from different regions and different blends, and some of them are super old and are great. There's also different kinds of teas, different, you know, how it's dried, how it's produced, that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So they made an attempt to have a more diverse, better quality tea selection, which I appreciate, but then once they, and the tea that they have, it's not terrible. It's not great, but it's not terrible. It's better quality than, say, your Lipton or your Tetley or any of the stuff you get in the United States. But they brew it totally wrong and ruin all of it. So this is pretty much where my biggest problem with it comes in.
So how did they brew it wrong?
Yeah,
how
explain. Is it
they brew it wrong? Okay, so like black teas. So, I mean, I think for the most part they have an oolong. They have a couple of black teas. What, three black teas, essentially a green tea. And then the red teas and then chamomile. Red teas are not even teas. Well, there's a red tea by Rooibos, the honey vanilla one, which is overly vanilla and gross. it is. It's like vanilla flavored. It's not pleasant. And then there's a honey bush, which is very similar to Rooibos. Both of those are kind of similar to black teas, but have no caffeine, tons of antioxidants, very good for you, but they're not really tea. And you can brew them forever at a really high temperature, and nothing bad happens to them. Because the flavor is kind of just what it is. With other teas, they need to be brewed at optimal temperatures to get the kind of flavors that you want out of the teas, and not push it to a point where you're getting bad flavors out of the teas. And specifically, very, very bitter flavors. Okay. So black teas usually go like just to boiling, so like 99, 100 degrees Celsius. Okay. About 210 degrees Fahrenheit for you Americans. Non-scientists. And then the green teas are typically like 75, 80 degrees. So quite a bit below boiling. And then like shorter steeps. And then there's steep times as well that really change. Like an oolong, you kind of want to steep longer than you would like a green tea or a white tea. The black tea's a little bit longer. And they don't pay any attention to any of that stuff. They put like roiling, boiling water on everything. So even though they have these kind of decent teas, not great, they're decent, they then just burn them. So you just end up with this like bittery cup of tea. So you might have someone who, you know, gets to drink their Lipton green tea every once in a while, and they're like, you know what, I'm going to spend this $4.75, whatever it is, and get this nice green tea with jasmine in it or something like that. Right? So they have a pretty good menu. for the most part. Yeah, they have a jasmine green. I don't think it has anything specific, any specific name to it. But then they proceed to burn it. You know, and serve someone a really bitter, nasty cup of tea that they won't even like. So then people won't even learn anything from this experience.
I see. Kind of,
if that makes sense.
So it's a good idea gone awry with application.
Yes.
Because they do have quite a few options. I mean, there's a lot there.
Yes. There's an Assam. There's a Darjeeling. There's a nice oolong. That oolong's probably the best thing that they have there. Like I said, the green jasmine, and then the chamomile, the honey bush, and then, oh, they have a chai as well.
And so have you ever walked up to there and in the process of brewing made them stop and do it the way you want?
You can't because the water's so hot. It's the same exact problem that Starbucks has. Like, Starbucks has pretty decent teas now. They're, again, not great, but they have a couple of decent ones. Like, their tiny green tips blend is actually really nice. But they just burn it. Ruin it. And I don't know why people don't know this. It's like, if anyone who drinks kind of tea at all, it's kind of common knowledge.
Yeah, and you should, if you're going to do something like this, a little research should have been done.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So you spent the time to get the teas and all that, and to think about what, you know, making it a little bit better than just serving just like a general black tea kind of thing. But then you don't do any research on how to prepare it.
Well, let me start by apologizing to Jamie if she's listening.
Yeah.
Because you have supplied more tea information than I could have possibly have expected.
I'm a little bit of a tea snob.
A little bit.
No, I do. I drink a lot of tea. I don't drink coffee. So,
Mike, have you ever gone here? Have you ever gone to Anandapur?
I have. I don't know anything about tea, and I usually don't get tea. I usually get coffee. I'm more of a coffee guy. Yeah. I've had the pastries there that, for whatever reason, this time we were here. Like, my daughter is a big fan of the glazed, like, I guess they're like...
Those giant pink like ones with the sprinkles?
No. The ones that were like figure eights. I forget what the glazed donut.
Yeah, but all the Joffrey's pastries are so nasty looking.
They're different now. When we went there last time, they were different. They're just not... And she was not a big fan, so I'm not sure if we'll be going here too much anymore.
Well, this I don't understand why all the Joffrey's carts, including this one, have these like super ugly, gigantic pastries. Like, the muffins are flat and huge. Mm-hmm. They're like, and they have like no top, which is the best part. So why would you make a muffin with no top? They have those big ugly Danishes that are just clearly like puff pastry with like a scoop of cream cheese in the middle and like some canned cherry pie filling. And like maybe bad Cinnabons. Oh, sometimes they have those huge, like 8-inch cookies that look as anything.
I never personally buy any of those from any of those carts because they look like they've been there for 3 days.
Oh, they're gross. They're terrible. I mean, I don't know if they're really gross because I've never eaten. But why would you eat one of those? They look awful.
And they seem they're the same at any of these carts. You see them in Epcot. You see them all over the place.
Yes. And any of the Joffrey's carts specifically.
Right.
There's like the one when you...
Yeah, there's that. Two in Epcot.
Yeah, right? Two in Epcot.
And two in Animal Kingdom.
There's the one outside... The Epcot is the one outside of Epcot and the one near Ellen's Energy Adventure. And right. the one in front of Animal Kingdom and then the tea cart.
Right, and that's it. I don't think there's any in the Magic Kingdom or Hollywood Studios, if my memory serves.
I don't think so either. Yeah. So I don't know what it is. And then my last couple of shots against it is that they serve it in really disgusting styrofoam cups. Like, are we really, you're in a park that's about conservation and saving the world, and you're served stuff in styrofoam. You're serving fancy, loose leaf, organic tea. Well, they're not organic. Fancy tea, supposedly, in styrofoam cups.
Well, what should they serve them in? Paper cups?
Serve in paper cups.
Yeah, it would be better in a paper cup for a tea drinker. I don't even know.
It doesn't really matter, I guess, but it would be less offensive. And they're also ugly. They're like those purpley, I don't know. I just don't know why you use styrofoam. I find it to be offensive.
You know, for a park that does so well with quick service and with carts and such, and really always has, it's this seems to be one of the few spots that misses the mark here.
Yeah, it could be so good with like the slightest bit of tweaking. It would be amazing. Like,
well, how would they be able to do that? How would they be able to do that in a cart if you need to, like, do each of these teas require you to brew them differently?
Yes, but they should know that. That's what they're charging. That's hard to pull off, though. For one.
That's true, but it's hard to pull off in a little cart.
No, it's not. The thing is, most, because they don't have that much, right? Like you said, they had the three black teas, which are basically the chai, the Assam, and the Darjeeling. I think that's it, right? Do they have like a breakfast tea? I don't think so.
Yeah, they have an English breakfast.
Do they?
Yeah.
Oh, no, they have that the iced tea.
Mm. Oh, that's probably what I'm thinking of. Yeah, they have that. It's an iced tea. Yep.
They don't. They have the Assam and the Darjeeling. But anyway, those you could pretty much brew all at the same temperature and they'd be fine. So, like, just boiling. And in Japan and places where they use a lot of tea, they sell, and you could even buy them here, these, like, things that spew out boiling water. And you change the settings on them. It's what they use now. But instead of keeping it at 180,000 degrees
Celsius,
like they do, Celsius, you know, just above molten lava, turn them down to the ranges that they should be. And, you know, have one for black tea, have one for green. I'm not saying do it perfectly, but cover your bases. Don't ruin the teas. And then suggest to people when you serve it to them. This is a, you know, make the people there educated. Make them talk to people. Maybe involve them in, like, wilderness explorers to talk about teas.
So that'd be kind of cool.
There's an idea.
Yeah, have them, like, educated about tea because it's neat and very, you know, cool from a historical point of view, cool from a knowledge point of view. And then delicious if it's made right.
Now,
that's just how I feel about it. It's not that difficult, you know. And suggest things like, this is this kind of tea. You should brew it for 2 to 3 minutes and then take out the tea bag.
Now, is Joffrey's a company that should know tea?
No, they're a coffee company.
They're a coffee company.
Yeah, and they have teas. That's like I said, their teas are not great. They're just buying some bulk whatever tea from random places and
throw
it in their own containers. From what I kind of looked on their website beforehand. The tea comes in kind of ugly containers that you would see like tea sold at like Home Goods.
Right.
It's similar to that. So no, I wouldn't expect them to. A lot of them just do it as like a side thought. And yeah, I don't know.
Could this be a place that Starbucks takes over, Mike?
You know what? They just bought Teavana. I don't know if you know that or what that other chain is, which is a tea chain that actually brews their tea properly and carries some nice teas. They're jacked prices, but they carry nice teas.
Yeah, this won't be where Starbucks is. There's no way.
No.
I mean, from everything I understand from Starbucks is they want something up front and from... Well, basically up front, because people, when they show up at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock in the morning, the first thing they don't want to do is, you know, where's my cup of coffee? Yeah. So this is kind of tucked in the back. It's in a weird location for somebody looking for like a little, you know, morning jolt and pastry. You know, it is in a weird spot for that kind of thing. And never will Starbucks agree to for this spot. Never.
Now, I mean, if Joffrey's wasn't in the parks as their sole coffee supplier in general, I would, you know, I think maybe there was a slight chance. Starbucks is opening a tea shop, like a tea only shop. So, and I forget where, in some city in America. So, you know, there's always the chance that if it does well, that they took over something like this. But I doubt it.
And after Mike's incredibly in-depth intro, you don't feel a little worse about making fun of it?
About the tea, the quality of the tea itself? No, that just makes it worse. if it was just like a cart that looked like the Joffrey's cart in Epcot,
you know, you'd be okay with it?
Yeah, like whatever. Like I would just hate on the whole thing. It would be fine. But the cart itself is beautiful.
There's parts you have to worry about now. There's parts you have to like now.
And the tea, the tea is not great, but it's pretty good. If you just brewed it right and put it in some non-offensive cups, I'd be much more into it.
And what other cart is there in anywhere in Disney World that actually tells a story like this one does? That it links two separate sections of a park?
No.
From, you know, the Shirkazong to Anandapur. And they even went out of their way to like create different slogan. Like the older version has a different slogan than this tea cart, which apparently, I think it said,
exporters of specialty teas. That's their slogan. Mm-hmm. And when you go into Expedition Everest and you see the old signs for a Royal Anandapur was a different slogan, guaranteed, absolutely pure. So they really went out of their way to create a theme for this thing. It's too bad that they kind of dropped the ball on the actual tea itself.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, you know, I don't know why. I don't, it's not that hard to think about. I just feel like people should take pride in their jobs. I don't know why they wouldn't. Like, someone runs this card, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they taste all the tea? Did they realize that it's all terrible?
Well, more so, it just seems like there's sort of a lack of research and background information gathered in order to do it, which seems very strange.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I'm not... Because it's not like there are... It's not like you're the only person in the world that drinks tea.
No. And that's what I mean. They have so many people coming through. You have so many people from, like, England, Ireland, like, you know, United Kingdom in general that's coming in, you know, to visit the parks. That are drinking tea all the time, that know some decent teas. You have tons of, you know, Indian folks and other people from Asia coming through that also drink good teas. And I'm sure if they, like, you know, someone that, like, is from China was like, oh, let me get the green jasmine, they would just throw it away, like I do.
So without going into a review or a rating process, because I really don't even know what we would rate it against, Are you saying, Adam, that you would not recommend it for somebody to go there? I mean, how would you handle that part of it?
I would say if I would not necessarily recommend it, especially for the price. If you do want to try it, what I would make them do is fill the cup like halfway with ice before they brew it.
Oh.
Which is going to confuse the uneducated employees tremendously. But do it anyway. It's the only way I can get tea at Starbucks and have it be half decent.
Well, and for somebody who's a big tea drinker, is there any place on property that you can actually get tea? Brewed the way you think it should be.
Yes. Pretty much just one place. No. Two places.
Okay.
The bar at, or I think in the restaurant as well, at The Wave. Has a good tea menu, and they brew theirs pretty properly for the most part. And then the best place is definitely Garden View Tea over at the Grand Floridian, the High Tea. Their teas are top-notch quality and are brewed correctly. And you'll notice when you get them, they're not that hot. You know what I mean? Like, they're hot, but they're not, like, rolling, boiling water.
So somebody there knows how to do it.
Yes. But again, I just don't, you know, it's Disney. They never cease to amaze me with the amount of inconsistency and the amount of thought they could put into, like, a backstory and then just be like, okay, now throw some tea in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know. Oh, wait, styrofoam? Yeah, okay, sure. Like, then what? No.
That is weird. The styrofoam cup is weird.
There should not be a styrofoam anything in all of Animal Kingdom.
No, nowhere.
There shouldn't be any in Disney, period, but whatever. I mean... everyone else has been using paper cups for the last decade.
Yeah, but if they sell it at that temperature, a paper cup is going to be asking for trouble.
Well, that's exactly it. I think they have to use the styrofoam because it's so hot.
Yep.
Oh, and then also they here's my last complaint. They put the loose tea inside this little tea bag, right? Which is fine. But they hang the side of the tea bag, the paper part, over the side of the cup. Which all it does is soak up the tea and then make it drips onto your hand. So not only is it molten hot, but then it also just burns the crap out of you. It's really a terrific experience.
So you have to go in and tell them to put in a couple of ice cubes and then do what?
No, not a couple.
Halfway.
I get the same thing with Star Wars. I'll put three in. No.
Okay.
No, fill the cup with ice pretty much.
Okay.
It's that hot.
Okay.
It needs to be brought down that much. Yeah. So I would say if you fill the cup halfway, then have them brew it. But that's what they're going to be confused by. They're going to want to brew it and then put the ice in.
And then is there something they need to do with the bag in order to make it better?
No. The bag is the bag. They need a new bag system.
Okay.
But that's the least of it. If the tea was brewed correctly and was in a not styrofoam cup, I would forgive the I'd live with the tea bags. And I would order tea from here all the time. If it was brewed correctly.
Well, folks, we got ourselves a tea education here today.
I'm sorry if that was terrible.
No, it wasn't. I just couldn't believe how much I don't know about tea.
I didn't even really go into it.
Before we go, Adam, plug your stuff, please. Give you know, links and all that kind of stuff.
So really, just go to DisneyHipsters.com. You could find our blog there. You could also find our podcast, our main podcast, Disney Hipster Podcast, or you could also find that on iTunes, Stitcher, that kind of stuff. We also used to have a podcast on the Tour Parents Podcast Network called Disney Hipsters 2, which is defunct for about 4 weeks, and then we will bring it back on its own feed, so you should look out for that. We're also on like Facebook, Twitter at Disney Hipsters, which is probably the easiest way to talk to us if you're interested.
I talk really to you all the time on there.
And I think you're going to have to Andrew's complaining about somewhere in your house, Andrew's complaining about the amount of time we're taking here recording this.
Oh, no, he's not. He's just sitting on the couch reading a book.
No, but my Twitter went off while...
Oh, well, did it? I'm not surprised. I made him a pineapple upside-down cake, so he should just be eating that and being occupied.
You made it, gave it to him and said, here, I'll be back in an hour.
I really did. I was like, here's the pineapple upside-down cake, here's some vegetarian spring rolls, and... Some
here's a fork. Vegetables. Go at it.
I gotta go record. He just got home from work, so...
Well, listen, thank you for joining us. Thanks for all the help you've given us over the start of this show. You guys, everybody there has been incredibly welcoming to us and has been such a great help for us here. So I can't thank you guys enough.
Yeah, thanks for having us. And you guys do have a wonderful show.
I do appreciate that. And
you really do.
And I thank everybody for listening to Radio Harambe. To learn about Disney's Animal Kingdom, we invite you to visit our site, jumboeveryone.com. You go there, you find everything you need to know. Also, while we're there, about the Animal Kingdom, sorry, also while you're there, we ask you to visit the conservation page. That's a place where we put some information on how you can help save wildlife. That is, after all, why we do this. You can also find both of us on Twitter, or all of us on Twitter. Adam told you you can find him at the @DisneyHipsters. I am at Radio Harambe. Safari Mike and his thousands of followers are at @JomboEveryone. We are also on Facebook and YouTube. You can find those links at jomboeveryone.com. Of course, as Adam said, follow them on Twitter and also go to DisneyHipsters.com to read their blog. Find their shows on iTunes. I'd give you a content alert if you are weak-hearted.
Weak-hearted? What does that mean?
Yeah, really, what does that mean?
If you're weak, if your constitution for vocabulary is weak,
your constitution for our vocabulary is terrible. Again, you're confusing me greatly.
Okay, let me put it this way:
don't listen to it with your children.
Don't listen to it with your children.
And if you're easily offended, you should definitely listen.
All of those things he said. But it is, believe me, it is the best. It is a fantastically funny show, and you will enjoy it.
We try.
I guess what else is there, Mike? Subscribe to us on iTunes, that kind of stuff.
The only thing I will say is that I will always remember how Cheers ended, how MASH ended, and how the Disney Hipsters 2 ended.
Yes. You should listen to the last episode of Disney Hipsters 2 because it's pretty awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's still up. You can get it, folks. Listen to it. It is epic.
Yes.
So for Adam and Safari Mike, I'm Dave McBride. Kwaharini, go well, and thank you for listening to Radio Harambe.